Curious City is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org. WBEZ's nonprofit Spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
What's up, Chicago? I'm Erin Allen, and this is Curious City. Last episode, the question we answered was about city streets. Specifically, things that Chicago builds on them, like speed humps, extended curbs, and those tiny little neighborhood traffic circles. The goal of all of these things is to slow you down, which goes against the desire to, you know, get to work as fast as possible. So what gives?
Basically, slowing down vehicles just makes everything safer.
That's Daniel Knowles. He wrote a book called Carmageddon with a very direct subtitle, How Cars Make Life Worse and What to Do About It. Daniel says people will almost always choose to drive.
People will always drive if it's the most convenient or the quickest way. I mean, that's just what people will do. And you can't exhort people to change. You have to kind of change the incentives.
We're going to talk to Daniel about the incentives we are given to choose a car and how to change them. We're also going to talk about why he thinks you probably overestimate how much you need a car. But first, that need for speed is deeply ingrained, and our team here at Curious City is not immune. So we're going to explore, in an unscientific way, another question. What's the fastest way to get to work?
Okay, so right now we're at the Garfield Park Conservatory, and traffic is picking up, I can tell.
To answer that question, and in the grand spirit of public radio, we held a good old-fashioned transit race.
On a Monday morning, bright and early, the birds are chirping.
Our team, myself, Justin Bull, Susie Ahn, all met up early on a Monday morning at a neutral location to see who could make it to work the fastest.
I can take whatever.
Snacks.
I can take whatever.
I'm on a bicycle.
Yep.
Justin is in the car, and Susie is on the CTA.
Justin, congratulations already.
The variables are many, and the stakes are low.
I'm probably not going to win the race, but that's okay. You know, I got a heavy old Schwinn.
At least you won't come in last.
We were all pretty sure we knew how this race was going to finish.
Google Maps has a tight race between the two of you. It has me right now cruising into victory, but you never know.
You never know. The tortoise and the hare surprised us, right?
And our finish line? The doors of WBEZ on Navy Pier.
3, 2, 1, go.
Let's go.
See you at that light where I'll be waiting.
I already dropped something. Oh, wow, Susie took off.
Oh my God, she's running. She's actually racing. She's like, I'm gonna win this.
Running to get on the train.
All right, I'm on the bike lane.
Oh my God.
Susie beat me. Oh, the train's coming.
Oh, I know why she was running now.
Oh no, it's coming.
This is big if Susie gets this train.
Ah, come on. Ooh, just in time.
All right, off we go.
Perfect.
Got my seatbelt on, got my check engine light on. I'm ready to go.
Doors. I'm gonna try to go a little faster than normal. I'm gonna get a little workout in.
This is morning edition on 91.5 WBEZ.
I'm gonna check out the traffic report here on the radio.
Traffic showing scattered delays on the expressways now. Streets are open through Grand
Park. Kind of looking like I'm going to skip the freeway, which is shocking. No, I'm not. I'm going to get on the freeway.
This bike lane on Lake, I don't remember this ever being here.
There are a lot more people getting on at Ashland at about 8:18.
All right, who am I kidding? I'm going the same pace I normally do.
Just chugging along down the Eisenhower, and what am I going at? It's not fast. I'm going 30, 35 miles an hour, but compared to my compatriots, that's probably pretty good. Actually, if Susie caught that first train, she is ahead of me at this moment.
All right, we're stopped for signal clearance, so that doesn't help.
Ooh, glass on the bike lane.
State and Lake is next.
All right, my stop's coming up.
All right, 8:22, we're at Damon.
I'm obeying all the traffic laws. That is my goal here. Not doing anything outside the bounds of the law.
And the bike lane is over.
All right, now off the train. Bus is nowhere in sight, so I'm going to be waiting for a while.
This is not a safe area for cyclists. Tulane, Lake Street, no bike lane.
Yeah, think about driving. Might be faster. Kind of boring. Being on a bike would be pretty fun right now.
A cyclist has passed me. It's always a funny kind of unofficial competition between cyclists, especially if you're going like relatively the same speed, which this guy is going way faster than me. I always tell myself his bike is a little lighter than mine, probably.
It's 8:30 and I am finally on the bus.
Gone through the old post office, cruising down Ida B. Wells. Oh, shoot, gotta pull over. Emergency vehicle.
All right, I think we're in the West Loop.
Yeah. I'm racing my colleagues. One person's driving, the other person's biking.
I'm trying to see who gets there first.
Yeah, kind of a toss-up right now.
Okay, I am at Buckingham Fountain.
All right, some car just pulled right in front of me.
It's we started just after 8, and it's 8:31.
No regard.
I'm almost to the pier. I'm getting real close.
All right, the State Street bus is rerouted, so we had a little detour.
All right. We are downtown, okay?
Home stretch.
Michigan Ave.
I don't know. Maybe I should be worried more about Aaron.
I'm going on Lower Wacker, or Lower Randolph, I guess, for a moment here.
Maybe I shouldn't be so cavalier. Nah, I'll be fine. I'm probably gonna win.
I can see the Ferris wheel, but we just need to make it to the bus terminal, and then I'm gonna get out and I'm gonna run. Probably lost, but gonna run anyway.
And in order to go down, one must go up. So here's this climb.
There you are, you peer.
I can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Looking at the bike path, not seeing any errands.
Thank you. All right. Yeah, hopefully.
Right, I am on the pier.
I guess this is the other variable I have to deal with.
All right, now I'm running.
Navy Pier West Parking Garage. West Parking Garage.
Running down the pier.
Can I get a spot?
Oh my god.
At 8:40.
If anything, I got the most running.
On a Monday.
From this modality.
Following a summer weekend in July. Tons of parking. There's tons of parking. My confidence is at an all-time high now. All right, I'm parked. Oh, I gotta get just a couple of things from the trunk.
Oh my god. Why do these doors have to be so far away?
Walking up. I'm about to win this thing. I have touched the front doors first. We knew it was gonna happen. And here we are.
I feel like I've been saying almost there for like 5 minutes now.
I feel accomplished. What that accomplishment is, winning a race with a combustible engine. That's not that big of an accomplishment, but you get it. I feel pretty good.
Hey.
Oh my god, it's Susie on.
Oh my god.
She's
so
winded.
So much running. Wow, Aaron's not here yet?
Aaron's not here yet.
Oh my God, didn't get last place.
I can't believe it. I'm shocked. Oh wait, I have
too.
A timer up. You're 4 minutes after me.
Whoa.
That
okay.
was shockingly close.
Oh no, I lost. Damn it.
Oh, there she is. Look at that, sailing in, no hands.
No hands.
Sailing in, no hands.
Ooh.
Hello.
Hello.
Here's a rundown of the times. In first place, car, Garfield Park Conservatory to Navy Pier in 34 minutes. CTA ran in 4 minutes later, with bike in third place 3 minutes after that. Now, of course, all these numbers are fuzzy. There were mishaps, there were built-in inequities, there was good luck and there was bad luck. So the bottom line, well, that depends on who you ask.
Bottom line for me, driving in today, super convenient, super fast, super easy, but I didn't get a workout like you two. I had to pay to park. I had to pay $14.
Bottom line for me, I got a great workout, got some sun, didn't spend a dime, but it's dangerous out there for the cyclist, and the weather may not permit.
Bottom line for me, price was right. I mean, it wasn't free, but it was $2.50. So, you know, that's better than Navy Pier parking. I guess I wasn't stressed. I don't think I would normally run. It was a fine mode of transportation.
Shout out to some of our past WBEZ colleagues who did their own grand transit race back in 2007. They went from City Hall to the Green Mill in Uptown. If you're curious, car won that race too, followed by bike, then CTA, and in a distant fourth, Metro. I talked to Daniel Knowles a couple hours after our transit race, so I asked him who he thought won this thing.
I'd be pretty sure it would be either you on the bike or Justin in the car, and would not expect the CTA to win, I'm afraid.
Then, begrudgingly, I told him the results.
I've got to reassess my damning judgment of the CTA. Clearly, it was horribly unfair.
But we're not just here to talk about this silly race I definitely want to get a rematch for. Daniel is the Midwest correspondent for The Economist. He's based in Chicago, so he biked over to WBEZ to talk to me.
I saw a car crash on my way here, and that's not even that, that happens quite a lot. And yeah, 40,000 Americans a year are dying in car crashes. You have something like a 67% chance in your life of being involved in a car crash. Obviously not dying in one, but like it's a big, genuine cause of death. It's, you know, it's not that far below opiates. It's more than the number of people murdered. And America really kind of stands out as having much higher rates of traffic death than other countries, other rich countries anyway.
Daniel is the author of the 2023 book, Carmageddon, How Cars Make Life Worse and What to Do About It. He writes that when it comes to driving, there are a lot of hidden costs.
Well, one of the really obvious ones is traffic. You're not stuck in traffic, you are traffic, and you're slowing everybody else down. And there are people who, you know, perhaps do need to be in a car, perhaps they're transporting something really heavy or whatever, and they're, you know, they're delivery vehicles. Some people who you know, don't have other options are being slowed down by everybody else. But there's also air pollution. There's the effect on climate change, which is massive. But there's also just things in terms of neighborhoods, you know, they're neighborhoods that are, that you can't walk around, are not very pleasant to live in. And there's a reason why very walkable neighborhoods are seen as very popular. So there are all these kind of costs that we've just began to get very used to of having cars dominate everything.
I wanted to ask Daniel two main things. About the merits of a city government like Chicago building things that slow down drivers, and also about the elephant in the room. You know, a lot of people have in their minds that driving is more convenient. And I wonder if you can kind of talk about how you think about solving for this tendency that we have to take the path of least resistance.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, if you look at Chicago, it is about 70% of the population who are driving to work rather than cycling or taking the CTA. It'll be less for people coming downtown, but, you know, you're out here in Navy Pier, you know, there isn't a subway stop that comes right here. It's not super easy to get here, and there's a lot of parking. So it is the most convenient way. And I think that people will always drive if it's the most convenient or the quickest way. I mean, that's just what sort of, you know, people will do. And you can't exhort people to change. You know, you have to kind of change the incentives.
Daniel says that in the U.S. and across the Western world, governments incentivize and subsidize the use of cars by offering free roads, tax breaks, and dedicating so much space to parking instead of, you know, anything else.
And inevitably, what that results in is everybody driving. It's not a level playing field. And, you know, it's often people say that my book is, they think that it's this kind of left-wing track, but there's almost a bit of a libertarian, you know, view on it. It's like government should stop paying everybody to drive.
You mentioned that the government incentivizes using cars. And I wonder, if you could just name some incentives you would want to see the government give to other types of commuters.
I mean, mostly I just want the incentives from cars taken away. Because I think generally that's more effective than subsidizing other forms of transport. You know, the reason why people don't walk and don't cycle is often because it's really scary because of the people driving. I do think that government has to put money into public transport. When it comes to bikes and things, so I don't think they need subsidies. They just need to be made safe options.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. In our last episode, we talked about traffic circles and how they make things safer for the driver and the pedestrian and a lot of other people who end up on a road, especially in a residential street, but anywhere. How do things like traffic circles fit into this framework of reducing our reliance on cars?
So basically anything that slows down drivers makes it easier to get around another way. If you're on a road where, you know, drivers going 30, you know, 35 miles an hour, they're very unlikely to stop for you, which means that crossing the road is hard, whereas drivers that are doing, you know, 15, 20 miles an hour are far more likely to stop for pedestrians to cross. It's also just less scary. If you're on a bicycle, you know, you're less likely to be hit, but also you're far less likely to die if you are hit. I mean, the chance of being killed by a car crash roughly doubles for every 10 miles an hour that the vehicle's going at, if you're a pedestrian, that is.
Oh, my God. Daniel, if you were to paint a picture of, you know, let's just dream big here, of the perfect city of Chicago when it comes to transit, first of all, what would that picture be?
So I can actually give you a good example from real life, because a few weeks ago I was in Montreal, and, you know, Montreal is like a North American city. It's got the same sorts of wide roads. It's, you know, kind of motorways, freeways, whatever that like you'd see in somewhere like Chicago, and looks in some places like Chicago, but they have really gone hard on cycling infrastructure. And in particular, in some neighborhoods, there's a neighborhood called Le Plateau, and it feels like Paris or Amsterdam. The number of people on bicycles, at least in the summer, is wild. And, you know, you talk to people there, they've about this, and I was reporting on it, so I did. And you find a lot of people have, like, they might still have a car, but their families, and they've given up the second car, that sort of thing. And I think Chicago is very flat. It's densely populated. It's actually very similar to Montreal in that sense. It has a lot of people working downtown. You know, it's not spread out like Houston. And so I don't think that's where Chicago could get to, or further even.
You think Chicago could get there?
Oh, yeah. I mean, politically, I'm not 100% sure how it would do it, but just practically, in terms of the infrastructure, in terms of what the city looks like, yeah, totally.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would even be that hard. A lot of people are already on bikes in the city, like a lot more than were, you know, 3 years ago.
Interesting. So you've noticed more cyclists in the last few years.
Oh, yeah. And there's data that proves that.
I do want to just bring forth the folks who are living in Chicago who can't bike, can't walk, maybe can drive, folks who are living with disabilities. And I want to hear you just talk about this this world with fewer cars and less driving and how that serves them as well?
Well, a good majority of people with disabilities can't drive. You know, I mean, if you're blind, you can't drive. A lot of people with disabilities can't drive. And their lives are made harder by the fact that it's so much harder to get around a car-centric place, you know. And one of the things you see in Montreal, which I've never seen here, are people in mobility scooters and electric wheelchairs in the bike lanes getting around. Mm. So I think this kind of idea that sort of reducing car dependency is bad for disabled people is wrong. But at the same time, you know, there are going to be some disabled people who do drive and will continue to need to do so. And I'm all fine with that. I'm just not sure why that justifies able-bodied people needing to drive everywhere at the same time. You know, I think if you have parking passes for disabled people, whatever it might be, I'm not saying we need to get rid of all of that. In fact, the people who are disabled who do need to drive will probably find their lives easier if not everybody else was driving.
Mm-hmm. I mean, speaking of that, you know, one question that came up is like, we do think that driving is more convenient. And in other places that I've lived personally, like Detroit, it is, you know, but like here in Chicago, where there's always traffic at all times, almost. Is it?
No. I mean, I definitely don't need a car in Chicago. I think that a lot of people overestimate how much they need to drive and how fast they can get around other ways in Chicago. I think driving is often convenient, but like, it doesn't have to be every journey. And I think sometimes when I, you know, talk about the book or whatever, you know, people kind of see it in like an all or nothing sort of way. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm literally a guy who wrote a book about how terrible cars are. And I still drive, you know, at least once a month, I'd say. And there are things that like, yeah, a car is really useful for, even if you're a militant like me. So I'm not saying everybody needs to give up their cars. I just think that we should find ways that people don't have to drive them literally to do everything.
Mm-hmm. Daniel Knowles is The Economist's Midwest correspondent based in Chicago and the author of Carmageddon, How Cars Make Life Worse and What to Do About It. Daniel, thank you.
This was great. Thank you ever so much.
This episode of Curious City was produced and engineered by me, Justin Bull, our producer, and Susie Ahn, our editor. Curious City is a production of WBEZ Chicago and is a part of the NPR network. If you have questions about Chicago and the region, send them our way at curiouscity@wbez.org. Or you can visit us at wbez.org/curiouscity. I'm Erin Allen. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you next week.
Rise and shine. WBEZ is serving local stories for breakfast every weekday morning from 5 to 11. Tune in on the WBEZ app to hear what Chicago's talking about as you start your day.